fights with passion and he inspires.
Are you ready for a war?
All right, welcome back to From A to Arbitration, the Thursday edition. I'm going to do a Thursday and Friday edition. I'm going to go over the Weir Report, all right? And the Weir Report, it's the findings of retired NBA Michael Weir, okay? And Mr. Weir was appointed by Mr. Paul Barner to investigate the charges brought forward against our president, Brian Renfroe. And the Weir Report is his findings, all right? And so we're going to talk about that today and tomorrow. And first off, I had a blast at regional training. I put some pictures up on From A to Arbitration, a Facebook page, with me with some of my people. Always have a good time when I go to regional training. We have a blast. Went to some training, but the nightlife, when you get around your friends, those that you've not seen for a while, man, that makes it one of the best times ever. Just a great time. And so got back late last night, well, early this morning, really. We had flown down to New Orleans and then took a bus over to Biloxi. Yesterday, we come back from Biloxi to New Orleans and our flight is delayed like 3 hours. Well, ended up, we didn't get to, the plane didn't show up till like 10 o'clock. And so we didn't get home till 11:30. And so it was a late night. And it was all day at the airport, which drains you if you know what I'm talking about. So we were exhausted. I'm still exhausted. Went to work this morning and had a $39.99 ride with me. So I was crawling out there today on my route, man. And so, yeah, I am absolutely bushed today. But anyway, we're going to get this done because I said I was. A few episodes ago, I talked about going to request the Weir Report, right? And so I wrote Paul Barner, and I requested it. And this is what I sent him via delivery confirmation. Executive Vice President Paul Barner, as a member in good standing, I'm appealing the Executive Council's decision to not go forward with two of the charges brought forward against President Brian Renfroe. As such, I'm requesting a copy of the Weir Report so that I may file the appeal. Thank you in advance for your cooperation in this matter. You can send the copy to my address listed below. And that's it. That's all I said. And so I get back yesterday, going to work, and my P.O. box is where I work. And here's the letter that Barner wrote me back. It says, Dear Brother Walton, this will acknowledge receipt of your undated letter in which you seek to appeal the Executive Council's decision to not go forward with two of the charges brought forward against President Brian Renfroe. Please be advised that the NELC Constitution does not authorize any such appeal. Accordingly, no further action will be taken in response to your letter. Your request for a copy of the investigative report relating to the charges is denied. Fraternally, Paul Barner. So, here's the problem. Here's the problem. It's my report. And that's what this union nowadays doesn't understand. It's my report. I don't have to have a reason to request it. You give it to me when I request it because it's my report. When President Sombrato had the charges brought against him, what did he do? He put the entire report out for everybody to see. The entire report was out. Every carrier in the country could see it. Why? Because it's the carrier's report. Who paid for the report? We did. Who paid for Brother Weir to investigate it? We did. Who paid for all the attorneys? We did. Who paid for the paper that the Weir report is on? We did. Who paid for the email? We did. Everything is the city letter carrier's. It's our report. And who says that it's our report? Well, President Washington says it. President Lincoln says it. You know why? Because they're on that money. They're on that money that I pay dues with. That's who said I could have it. And so when Mr. Barner says, you can't have the report, what he's telling me is I can't have something that's mine. It's my report. Unfortunately, for him, he doesn't run anything. He thinks he does, but he doesn't run anything. Do you know who runs this? The city letter carrier runs this. That's who runs this. He doesn't. The only thing he runs is his lips across labor's ass. That's the only thing he runs. And I'm surprised that I got a typed letter. He must have gotten out of labor's lap long enough to come type this letter to me. But unfortunately for him, I've got the report, bitch. I've got the report, and I'm going to read it today. And I hope you're listening to me read it. Because like I said, you don't run shit here. The city letter carriers run this union, and y'all have forgotten that. But today, it will be a strong reminder of who runs this union. You know why? Because you know where you said you denied me getting the report? I've got the report, motherfucker. I've got it, and I'm going to read it. Why? Because it's my report to read as a city letter carrier. This union has gotten so far off track with who they represent. Wait and see this. Wait and see. You will see this union retaliate in full force. Watch and see. Because they are butthurt that the carriers have this report. Their asses are chapped that the letter carrier has their own report. Something that they paid for. My dues paid for. You're going to see the establishment strike back. I promise you that. I know them too well. I know how this works. And I'm going to keep going after the establishment until the establishment is changed. Because who we have in there now is not getting it done. They're clueless. You've got one in bed with labor and another has no idea what in the fuck is going on. And so watch and see the establishment try to strike back because this report got out. I know what I'm talking about. Watch and see. But what they don't understand is this. When you have this vote that's fixing to come down, they're going to do it secret ballot. They won't do it in public because they don't want anybody to know how they voted, especially when I read this report because it's damning. They don't want anybody to know how they voted. Unfortunately, when they try to retaliate about the report, it will expose those who support this report. It will expose those who choose to overlook the findings of our brother, Mr. Weir. And that's when we'll have them. That's when we'll have them, because where do cockroaches want to stay? In the dark. That's where cockroaches want to stay. When they retaliate, it will turn the light on. And they're too foolish to see that. We set a trap, and I guarantee you they will step in it. Right? I set a trap with this letter. They're fixing to step in the trap. You've got people in place that don't know anything about how arbitration works, setting traps. You got Renfro, who had one arbitration. He deals with people in suits. He doesn't understand the game that we're playing. You got Barner, who tells everybody, hey, when I was at the B team, I never impassed one case that tells you how much he sold out the city letter carrier. You've got Mr. Barner, who is being a straight punked by labor right now. He doesn't see what's coming. He didn't see the traps that were set. And watch the retaliation that goes on with this Weir report and how they expose themselves. Because sometimes you play chess while buffoons play checkers. And we played chess right here, and they fell for it. And you'll see what I'm talking about, trust me, because they're too stupid to get out of their own way. But we're going to read this report right now. We got a bunch of pages. I'm going to read half of it, and then tomorrow I'll read the other half. But remember this. Remember this. It's our report as city letter carriers. It's our report. It is not NALC's report. It is ours because we pay the dues that made the report This is transparency, which our union hates, most of them. So when people get upset about the report being read or the report being provided, it is our report. Everything that they do is ours. They work for us. We do not work for them. Little Barner thinks that we work for him. We do not work for you. You work for us. Y'all need to understand that. For the next 2 years, y'all work for us until y'all get fired and the new regime takes over. So for the next 2 years, just know, you work for us. So you do what I tell you to do. Okay? When I tell you to give me something, you give it to me. All right? Because you work for me. And so I tell you what to do. And so you'll start doing that from now on. Okay? When I tell you to do something, you do it. Because you work for me. And I pay money for you to work for me. Okay, little man? So from now on, you do what I tell you. So we're going to get into this report. I love just agitating the shit out of motherfuckers. You know what? I don't know why I'm like that. I've been like that my whole life. Maybe I got that from my brother. I don't know, but I like just making motherfuckers mad. And they're easy. Those motherfuckers are easy. I tell you, little Barner, he is a bully to those that he can bully. Right? The ones that he can go in and threaten them with their position. He is just like postal management. He's just like a bully manager, bully supervisor that knows that they have that authority over some. So they'll use that authority to be bullies. Well, that's how little Barner is. He can bully those that he knows he can bully. But us down here, he can't bully, you know, because we'll put a foot in that ass if he came out here talking that shit to us on the workroom floor. So it's just funny. It's funny to hear the people talk about how riled up little Barner gets up there, how pissed off he gets about stuff, especially about just a city letter carrier, because that's all I am. And little man gets upset about Corey down here in Nashville, little city letter carrier. So... And I'm just messing with you, little Barner. Don't worry about it, man. I'm just messing with you. But, yeah, you ain't going to come down here and bully us on the workroom floor, I can tell you that. But anyway, I got off on something there. I'm sorry. But I just thought it was funny him sending me this letter, and I got the damn report, you know, before he sent the letter. Here's the thing. If I would have requested the report while the investigation is still going on, I can understand that. It's still my report. I still paid for it. But while the investigation is going on, if you didn't want the carriers to have the report, okay. The investigation is over with. The hearing is over with. There's nothing to lose by giving the city letter carrier the report. You don't want us to have the report because of what's in the report. And unfortunately for you, my man, I got the damn report before you sent me the letter saying I couldn't get the report. But that's all right. That's all right, little fella. I'm going to read the report that you said I couldn't have. How's that sound? All right, so here's what's in the report. You got an email from... Barry Weiner, and he's talking about the charges, how they're going to handle the charges, the hearing for the charges, and then you have the charges that Mr. Jackson has filed against our president, and then you have the Weir report, and that's where I'm going to start, because I've already read the charges to you on that episode. I've already read that, and now we have the Weir report, and that's what I'm going to read. I will not read sensitive material about Mr. Renfro or about anybody. I will not do that. I don't care how I feel about anybody. I will not do that. Okay? I'm going to read the report. If there's any sensitive material as far as documentation, I will not read that. I'm just not going to do it. All right? Because that's not who I am. I like to chat motherfuckers' asses and get motherfuckers pissed off because I know they ain't going to step up to nothing, but I'm not going to be that person, all right? So I'm just going to read the report, and I will skip over any sensitive material, okay? Charge 1A, abandoned position and dereliction, neglect of duty. Now, these are his findings after his investigation, and he did a very thorough investigation. I spoke to him quite a bit when he was investigating these charges, and the man was very thorough, and I give him that. He didn't hold anything back. And so, charge 1A, abandoned position and dereliction, neglect of duty. President Renfro was scheduled to attend the regional RAP sessions of Region 1, Region 11, and Region 14. It is true that his attendance was announced and a significant period of time was set aside for him to speak to the attendees. When he did not show up, the MBAs had to scramble to fill that time in two of the regions. In his statement regarding this issue, President Renfro said he was physically incapacitated. He did attend the Region 7 RAP session in Minneapolis, but indicated he was in intense pain. Michelle McQuality attended that RAP session as well. They both arrived on March 28th, but President Renfro came in on a later flight. He had just returned on March 28th to the NELC headquarters building after an extended absence from March 16th through March 27th, during which no one knew exactly where he was. He flew out that evening to attend the RAP session. On March 29th, President Renfro spoke for 3 hours, then attended a retirement dinner for retired MBA Troy Fredenberg that evening. He and Michelle took an early flight back to Washington, D.C. on the morning of March 30th. I spoke with Michelle, MBA Patrick Johnson, and former MBA Troy Fredenberg. Each of them indicated that President Renfro did not exhibit any signs of being sick or having any physical difficulties during that day and that evening. President Renfro had previously requested that his chief of staff obtain tickets for the opening day between the Washington Nationals and the Atlanta Braves on March 30th. He indicated that he would take EVP Paul Barner to the game. He never notified EVP Barner of his plan. Chief of Staff Corey Blaylock said that she did arrange for the tickets through a political fundraiser, but her understanding is that Brian did not attend the game. President Renfro and Michelle McQuality were scheduled to fly together to San Diego on March 31st for the Region 1 RAP session, but President Renfro did not make that flight. Branch 70 President Ricardo Guzman picked up Michelle at the airport. Shortly thereafter, President Renfro contacted President Guzman to tell him he had injured his toe and had to seek medical treatment. He told President Guzman he would be flying in the next day, April 1. While President Guzman was waiting at the airport the next day, President Renfro texted him that he had missed his connecting flight. He did not indicate whether or not he was still coming for the RAP session, and that he did not respond to President Guzman's attempt to get back in touch with him. The reality is he never got on the first flight out of Washington, D.C. See attachment. I have enclosed the various tickets that were issued for the trip to San Diego and the return to Washington, D.C. Metropolitan Travel advised that their system indicated the trip was suspended. This means that no part of the ticket was used. Had President Renfro flown on the first leg of the ticket, their system would have reflected that he had checked in and used part of the ticket. 1 hour before he was scheduled to speak on April 1, President Renfro called MBA Keisha Lewis and informed her he could not make it due to a problem with his foot. Keisha contacted VP James Henry and asked him if he could step in via WebEx. Michelle had some notes for the president's presentation with her, and she was able to provide them to VP Henry to assist him in addressing the members. However, it was a last-minute situation with a lot of technical difficulties because it was not planned. VP Henry spoke for approximately 20 minutes from his location on vacation. By canceling at the last moment, not only did President Renfro fail to fulfill his duties, but he also left others having to fill in for him, with little or no preparation. President Guzman said that many members had traveled considerable distances to hear President Renfro's presentation and were upset at his absence. NBA Keisha Lewis agreed with President Guzman's assessment. She also said they expected him to be there and are still upset that he did not come. See attachment 1. I've enclosed an email from President Guzman dated June 24th requesting an explanation for his absence from the Region 1 RAP session. Region 11's RAP session was scheduled from April 4th through the 6th in Syracuse, New York. On April 4th at 2:36 p.m., NBA Mark Camilli texted President Renfro to ask when he was landing and if he was going to need transportation. President Renfro responded that he would be getting in late and would just Uber or take a cab. NBA Camilli texted back with breakfast arrangements and the starting time of 8 a.m. for the general session. At 6:42 p.m., President Renfro asked for the hotel's location, and Mark provided it. President Renfro contacted Dove late by text sometime between 7 p.m. and 9 p.m. on April 4th to tell him he was not coming. Doug and Michelle McQuality were present at RAP session to assist with the training. Doug notified NBA Mark Camilli that evening. Initially, Mark thought he might be joking. At 7:53 a.m. on April 5, 7 minutes before the general session was to start, it became clear that he was not. President Renfro texted NBA Mark Camilli that his dad's infection had spread to his blood, so he was going back down there that morning. He apologized and asked Mark to give everyone his best. When President Renfro's sister, Liz Bracey, was asked about this visit to their father, she responded that he had not visited him at that time. Again, President Renfro left others in the difficult position of having to fill in for him while the little advanced preparation. I'm going to read that again. Because this shows you what a low-down son of a bitch that is. And I was going to try to be neutral and just read this. Okay, and a lot of this I'm reading for the first time as you're hearing it. I got it. I was in regional training. I was not able to read all of this. Okay, so a lot of this I'm reading real time. Right here for the most part. Listen to this right here. President Renfro texted NBA Mark Camilli that his dad's infection had spread to his blood, so he was going back down there that morning. He apologized and asked Mark to give everyone his best. When President Renfro's sister, Liz Bracey, was asked about the visit to their father, she responded that he had not visited him at that time. Again, President Renfro left others in the difficult position of having to fill in for him with little advance preparation. NBA Camilli noted that 50% to 60% of the attendees were first-timers. They had been enticed by their branch leaders to attend because the national president would be there to provide a detailed report on the issues that NELC was dealing with. They were disappointed when he did not show up. See attachment 1. I've enclosed a copy of the text thread between President Renfro and NBA Mark Camilli. I've also provided copies of the flights arranged for him by Metropolitan Travel, which he did not use. The Region 14 RAP session was held on April 15th through 17th in Manchester, New Hampshire. President Renfro called EVP Paul Barner that day before it started to inform him he would not be able to make it. Paul informed NBA Rick DeCheka that President Renfro had a personal matter to attend to, so Paul would be attending instead. He flew down on Saturday night and did the presentation on Monday morning. Rick had to cancel a president's meeting that he had scheduled for Sunday night, but because Paul stepped in, the training was able to proceed as planned. Many of the attendees were aware of the president's father's illness and assumed that he had taken a turn for the worse. The general consensus among the members was that they were sympathetic to President Renfro's situation and wished him well. Actually, at that time, President Renfro was preparing to take a leave of absence to begin treatment for alcohol addiction. That is why he was not available for this RAP session. And then it's got all of the plane tickets, okay, and those texts that he was talking about. It's got the email from Brother Guzman. Charge 1B, neglect of duty. This charge cites Article 9 of the National Constitution, which defines the duties of the officers, in particular Section E, which specifically applies to the NELC's president's responsibility for carrying out the collective bargaining duties of the union. It states that President Renfro's absence during the period of preparing for collective bargaining and engaging in collective bargaining were detrimental to the union's ability to effectively bargain for a new contract. Additionally, it alleges that President Renfro did not leave any notes or evidence of advanced preparations for the negotiating team to rely upon as they moved forward with their efforts on behalf of the membership. This resulted in their having to start from scratch midway through the negotiating period. I've enclosed a bargaining timeline for 2023, which was prepared by Special Executive Assistant to the President, Tim McKay. Tim also provided the NELC-USPS subcommittee assignments and the NELC internal bargaining subcommittee schedules. See attached. 6 national officers and 2 NELC headquarters staffers served as the chairs of the national agreement articles that were covered by the 7 subcommittees. Prior to the Executive Council meeting in Marietta, Georgia on January 23rd through 26, there was only one meeting addressing the collective bargaining process. This occurred on January 18th. It was essentially a general overview of the process, including discussions of assignments, timelines, strategy, and goals. In February, there were several meetings regarding the bargaining subcommittee, which will be addressing workplace rules. EVP Paul Barner, Special Executive Assistant to the President Tim McKay, and Assistant to the President for Administrative Affairs Chris Henwood were very involved in these meetings. There was a bargaining subcommittee meeting on February 14th. All officers and staff who work at headquarters were apprised of their roles, responsibilities, and assignments. The goal is to finish all internal subcommittee meetings and submit bargaining proposals to main table negotiators by the end of March. President Brian Renfro and Executive Vice President Paul Barner oversaw that meeting. None of these meetings addressed collective bargaining on the economics issue for a new contract. The collective bargaining opening session was held at USPS headquarters on February 22nd. This is essentially a photo op. President Renfro and PMG DeJoy shook hands and gave their respective speeches regarding the need to work together toward achieving a national agreement that best serves the interests of letter carriers and the Postal Service. Achieving this goal requires the full attention of all NELC officers, but especially the national president. The only time that President Renfro is listed in attendance at another meeting prior to this taking a leave of absence on April 17th is the USPS financial presentation, which was held at USPS headquarters on April 10th. This is a one-sided presentation which happens during each year when the contract is due to expire and is not a negotiating session. The next day, the collective bargaining subcommittees met in their respective groups all day at NELC headquarters. Thereafter, they generally met in accordance with the established schedules in person or virtually. On March 6, biweekly bargaining logistics meetings began with the USPS for planning, logistics, timelines, bargaining proposals, etc. As noted in the timeline, this has been going on for 5 months. At this point, all the meetings are being chaired by EVP Paul Barner. This is not unusual. Traditionally, the Executive Vice President oversees the workplace rules issues while the President oversees the economics negotiations. Ultimately, 203 proposals were generated by the subcommittees. 140 of these were shared with USPS during negotiations. One or two subcommittees were still working on issues beyond the March 31 deadline. 2 times per week, EVP Paul Barner, in partnership with the heads of the subcommittees, discussed their various ideas and positions with management counterparts to find resolutions that are acceptable to both sides. Paul indicated that they are making good progress in this arena. President Brian Renfro started his leave of absence on April 17th. Prior to then, he was absent for significant periods of time during which no one knew where he was. See attachment. I've enclosed the door access flat report for the time frames in question. In addressing the charge, neglect of duty, President Renfro argues that he did not leave the union unprepared for contract negotiations. On page 6 of President Renfro's rebuttal to this charge, he states that the only replacement on any negotiating team was EVP Paul Barner replacing me in economic discussions. This is not true. On April 20th, Paul reached out to former President Fred Rolando for assistance with the economics negotiations. Paul and Fred worked closely together to get this process on track. The executive council was aware of the former president's involvement. Also, on page 6 of President Renfro's rebuttal, he stated, "During the time I was dealing with my illness, EVP Barner progressed with our goals, and upon my return, we have continued to move forward seamlessly. The fact is, Fred and Paul developed a strategy and some goals on what they wanted to accomplish on the economic issues. Brian and Paul are now moving forward with a plan." On page 6, President Renfro further stated, "EVP Barner and I communicated throughout the collective bargaining process prior to my absence and throughout the majority of my absence. This is not true." EVP Barner explained that their communication regarding collective bargaining prior to President Renfro's absence involved workplace rules. Paul asserts that he received no ideas or guidance on collective bargaining on the economic side of the equation. Paul further stated that he is unaware of any prep work done by President Renfro in advance of his absence. He asserts that he and Fred started from scratch. He had never engaged in economic negotiations before, nor had President Renfro for that matter. Additionally, Paul asserted that they had rarely communicated during Brian's absence, and when they did, it was mainly about how Brian was doing with his treatment. Special Executive Assistant to the President Tim McKay noted that during his infrequent conversations with Brian during his absence, they discussed his health and sports for the most part. Prior to his retirement, President Rolando started running tables with Jim Yates, the Director of Life Insurance, in anticipation of the 2023 collective bargaining negotiations. Jim is a labor economist. He plays a very important role on the economic side of negotiations. When USPS and NELC get close to an agreement on that pay table, starting pay, top pay, number of steps involved, length of waiting periods, etc., he provides the cost analysis so the parties understand what the economics will truly entail. That usually does not occur until after the contract has expired. Jim indicated that President Renfro was aware of the initial tables that Fred had developed and left for him. Other than brief conversations in the hallway, Jim further stated that the first actual meeting he had with President Renfro on the economics was 1 week after his June 26th return from his leave of absence. That had been over a month after the contract had already expired. As soon as he came on board in April, Fred contacted DPMG Doug Tolino to let him know that he and EVP Paul Barner would be negotiating with him. Mr. Tolino told him he had never heard from President Renfro at all. On the NELC USPS Subcommittee Assignments Handout 1 enclosed, DPMG Tolino and President Renfro were scheduled to meet on Articles 9, 21, and Appendix A. While the other subcommittee meetings took place, those three did not. Mr. Tolino also noted that this was the latest NELC and USPS had ever started negotiations on the economics. Fred was concerned that DPMG Tolino might employ that argument at interest arbitration should the parties go that route. It is important to remember that the 90-day period for negotiations, which began on February 22nd, was set to end on May 20th. At that point, the parties were already 60 days into the negotiation period, with a contract about to expire in 30 days, and they had not even begun to negotiate on the economics issue. They were definitely starting from scratch. Involving former President Rolando at this stage of the game was a necessary and good decision by EVP Barner. Fred's knowledge and expertise garnered from three previous contract negotiations, as well as his personal connection with DPMG Tolino during those negotiations, allowed him and Paul to hit the ground running in the effort to get the process on track. As president, when contract negotiations were set to begin the next year, Fred always started meeting informally with Doug in December. Then after the opening ceremony and the 90-day negotiating period had begun, they would meet once per week. Those meetings were always off the record, but they gave them the opportunity to exchange ideas and conceptualize what the contract should look like from their respective points of view. By the time they got to the hotel lockdown week, they were well beyond a simple starting point on the road to crafting a contract. This is not to say that they had a simple task ahead of them. The last contract was settled during arbitration, and the one before that was settled just before arbitration. But by starting early and meeting often, Fred and Doug laid the groundwork for ultimately reaching those settlements. During lockdown week at the DoubleTree by Hilton Hotel in D.C., Crystal City, May 15th, May 20th, Fred and Paul initially shared with Doug the table that Fred had worked up last year. During those discussions, Fred contacted Jim Yates and asked him for some updates to the table, changing the waiting periods, shortening the time to the last step, adjustments to starting pay and top pay, etc. They shared the new table with Doug and continued with their negotiations. In total, they had 8 meetings with Doug, their last being on June 28th. Former President Rolando felt that they were getting close to beginning to deal with the analytics of the pay scale. They scheduled another meeting for 2 weeks later, but President Renfro did not want former President Rolando to continue his involvement in the collective bargaining process. I do not understand why President Renfro took that position. The union got such a late start on contract negotiations over the economics issues, it would seem that having a valuable resource such as a former President Rolando would be beneficial moving forward. Nonetheless, President Renfro and EVP Barner took that meeting and all subsequent meetings. The last time I talked to Paul, he said he thought they were making progress. We are, of course, past the 60-day mediation period and looking at possible arbitrators for interest arbitration. On Monday, May 15th, President Renfro contacted Tim McKay. He asked him how the first day of bargaining had gone. Tim said it went well. This was the first time Brian had called about collective bargaining since he had taken a leave of absence, but at that point he did not ask for any details. On May 19th or 20th, President Renfro emailed Tim McKay to get a copy of the statement from NELC about the status of collective bargaining. Tim provided a working copy. Brian became very angry when he saw that former President Rolando was involved in crafting that statement. The membership had the right to know that NELC had not reached a new contract with the Postal Service before it expired on May 20th. They also needed to be apprised of the next steps in the process. Again, President Renfro seemed to be more concerned about that the former president was involved in the negotiations instead of grateful that he had stepped into the void left by Brian's absence to ensure that the process moved forward for the benefit of the membership. Okay. I told you I was going to try to remain neutral on this. But when I tell you, talk about narcissism and being narcissistic and unapologetic, this is the perfect example. Now here's President Rolando, retired, coming back to help the members with Barner. And I'm going to read that paragraph again. On Monday, May 15th, President Renfro contacted Tim McKay. He asked him how the first day of bargaining had gone. Tim said it went well. This was the first time Brian had called about collective bargaining since he had taken a leave of absence. But at that point, he did not ask for any details. On May 19th or 20th, President Renfro emailed Tim McKay to get a copy of the statement from NELC about the status of collective bargaining. Tim provided a working copy. Brian became very angry when he saw that former President Rolando was involved in crafting that statement. The membership had the right to know that NELC had not reached a new contract with the Postal Service before it expired on May 20th. Do you know why that's important? Because the membership has the right to everything, even this report. The membership is who runs the NELC. It is not Rolando. It is not Renfro. It is not Barner. It's none of them. The city letter carriers run the show. That's even dealing with this weird report. So I'm glad he put that in there. The membership had the right to know that NELC had not reached a new contract with the Postal Service before it expired on May 20th. They also needed to be apprised of the next steps in the process. Again, President Renfro seemed to be more concerned that the former president was involved in the negotiations instead of grateful that he had stepped into the void left by Brian's absence to ensure that the process moved forward for the benefit of the membership. I asked Director of Life Insurance Jim Yates how the negotiations were going. He indicated that they were a little behind from two rounds ago. I then asked him where he would be if former President Rolando had not gotten involved. He said that he would be further behind. When I asked Fred that question, he asserted that President Renfro's actions during the contract negotiations were negligent and potentially disastrous for our 205,000 active city letter carrier members. Fred also noted that Brian's inaction prior to 2023 by not pursuing treatment for his addiction to alcohol played a significant role as well. Fred noted that there were at least a dozen instances of drunkenness and inappropriate behavior towards an NELC staffer over the years. Former President Rolando further stated, "While it was important for President Renfro to get treatment for his alcoholism, it was, nonetheless, a horrible time to walk away from the union." He further stated that the preparation and engagement for collective bargaining, particularly on the economics of the said bargaining, is the president's bailiwick and sworn duty. Fred also praised EVP Paul Barner for his professional leadership during this difficult time. He pointed out how he had managed to handle his own duties while stepping up to take on such an important role in the economics negotiations. Alcohol addiction is a disease. That is a fact. But just like any other disease, it needs to be treated sooner rather than later. Assistant Secretary Treasurer Mac Julian was an addiction counselor before becoming a letter carrier. He stated that he had some productive conversations with President Renfro about his alcohol addiction. He noted that in his experience dealing with this disease, the addict is not responsible for his or her illness, but once they know they have a problem, it is on them to correct it. President Renfro didn't suddenly contract this disease in 2023. He has exhibited the symptoms and the effects of alcohol addiction since 2016, at least. His claim on page 12 of his rebuttal of not having a physical addiction in 2018 when he was arrested for DUI notwithstanding. At the LA convention in 2016, EVP Renfro was intoxicated and behaving inappropriately. Corey Blaylock Keller, who at the time was the NELC lobbyist and in charge of the legislative department, was uncomfortable enough to ask President Rolando to be removed from traveling with him. In the fall of 2017, another issue arose with his alcoholism. Eddie Davidson, who was an assistant to the president for legislative matters at that time, received a call from EVP Renfro's phone at 1 a.m. When he answered, he was surprised to hear a woman's voice. As it happened, she was a Good Samaritan who had found Brian passed out in the bushes near his apartment. God bless. She found Eddie's number in Brian's phone and called him to see if he could help. At that time, Eddie lived in Fairfax, Virginia, so he called Paul Barner, who lived closer to D.C. Paul did not answer, so Eddie called the woman back to say he was coming, but she said he had contacted another person with Brian's phone and that person would be coming. That person was Corey Blaylock Keller. By the time she arrived, Brian had revived enough to make his way back to his apartment. Corey did not know his apartment number, but she was able to figure it out probably with the help of a Good Samaritan. She knocked on the door, asked him if he was okay, yelled at him, and then went home. Ed Morgan, Eddie, and Corey had a conversation about the incident the next day, and President Rolando was told what had happened. During my interview with her, Corey indicated that she knew Brian needed help as early as 2017. At the 2018 National Convention in Detroit, EVP Renfro was involved in three separate incidents while intoxicated. Two of them involved inappropriate behavior towards other members' wives. The other one involved pro basketball player Mike Beebe in the lobby of the convention. Brian was grabbing onto him, and Beebe pushed him off. Eddie and others had to get Brian away from him to avoid a confrontation. 2 months later, EVP Renfro was arrested for driving under the influence, DUI in Washington, D.C. Just over 2 weeks later, Eddie Davidson arrived at the NELC headquarters building early one morning to find that the side door had been broken. He called Paul Barner, who informed him that his chief's engineer, who came into the office by 5 a.m., had already apprised him of the fact. Eddie also said that Paul informed him there was a video showing EVP Renfro yanking on the door before the glass shattered. The damage probably occurred the night before, EVP Rembro admitted to Paul that he was responsible for the damage. He said he just pulled on the door once and the glass shattered. The mag lock on the door would need 200 pounds of pressure to separate the magnet. Before that would happen, the frame would flex, causing glass to shatter. It would take a great deal of force and significant effort to accomplish that. Normal pulling on the door wouldn't be enough. Brian would have had to have been yanking on the door very hard for an extended period of time. Given the fact that the card system for entry into the building was in place at that time, the question is why? Even if he had lost his card or didn't use it to exit the building, he wouldn't have been able to re-enter the building in that manner. I have enclosed a proposal for Central Glass DC dated 10-1-2018 to fix the door. After the Detroit convention, President Rolando assigned Eddie Davidson to handle the legislative side of EVP Renfro's duties. In February 2019, Eddie was promoted to executive assistant to the president, but she actually worked directly with Brian. He said that Brian was unreliable. His attendance was atrocious. Either he was not showing up for work or he would come in late and leave early. Eddie used Paul Barner as his resource for getting things done when Brian was unavailable. Other staffers and some resident officers were aware of EVP Renfro's behavior. Eddie stated that it was common knowledge that he drank a lot and had a problem maintaining control when he did. Sometime in 2019, Tim McKay took the issue of Brian's drinking and attendance to President Rolando. He addressed it, and there was improvement for a while. Then at the National Rap Session in Denver, August of 2019, Brian was drinking and became physically aggressive toward President Cliff Sadler from Bradenton, Florida, apparently because he was speaking with Kathy Baldwin, Lou Drass's wife. Sadler wrote a letter to President Rolando. Fred addressed it with Brian, who assured him he would take care of it. In reality, Eddie took care of it, convincing Sadler that Fred would ensure it never happened again. EVP Renfro's issues with attendance and unreliability lasted pretty much until NALC switched to remote work in accordance with COVID protocols. Remote work remained in place from March 2020 until July 2022. During this period, it was nearly impossible to keep track of what Brian was doing and how he was behaving. This pattern of behavior continued in the latter part of January 2023, although Chief of Staff Corey Blaylock Keller said she knew President Renfro was not in a good place at the beginning of the year. At the Executive Council meeting in Marietta, Georgia, President Renfro showed up late and intoxicated to at least one of the meetings. On one of the days EVP Barner went to the parking lot to call him, he drove up, exited the car, stumbled forward, and would have fallen to the ground if Paul had not caught him. On March 14th, President Renfro and Chief of Staff Keller traveled to Biloxi, Mississippi, for the Region 8 rap session. Bryant's presentation was scheduled for the next day. He went to one of the bars in the Golden Nugget Casino where everyone was staying and the training was scheduled. See Charge 4. Many NALC members were gathered there and most of them were drinking. Chief of Staff Keller did not go to the bar. NBA Steve Lassen said that he left the bar at 2:30 a.m. At that time, President Renfro was still there and still drinking. The rap session was scheduled to start at 8 a.m. At 6:30 a.m., Brian texted Corey that they would meet in the lobby between 7 and 7:30 a.m. He did not show up. Executive Coach Julie was waiting there with Corey. They started to look for him. Unfortunately, there was no room in his name because his room had been comped. They went to security for help, saying this was potentially an emergency. Unbeknownst to them, RAA's Monica Walker and Chris Strickland were also searching for him. Suddenly, President Renfro started texting again and showed up at the elevator. He was clearly intoxicated. Corey and Julie walked him to the room where the rap session was being held. Corey was very concerned. She told him not to go into the room. Brian said, "I'm fine," so they entered together. President Renfro did a significantly shorter version of his presentation. NBA Lassen said he spoke for 1 hour at most. I asked Chief of Staff Keller if she thought anyone noticed he was intoxicated. She said it was obvious to her, but perhaps not to the attendees. Steve Lassen said he didn't seem as crisp as usual and a little grumpy. Other attendees said he was slurring his words and jumping around from one topic to another. They had difficulty understanding the presentation. From March 16th to March 27th, no one knew exactly where President Renfro was and if he was going to come into the office. Chief of Staff Keller said she thought he was in his apartment in D.C. Security Treasurer Nicole Ryan had charters that only the president could sign, and EVP Paul Barner wanted to discuss collective bargaining issues with him. When Paul was able to contact him by phone, Brian would cite some medical issues, say he was coming in tomorrow, but would not show up. He did come in for a little over 3 hours on March 28th, took care of the charters, then Brian left to attend the Region 7 rap session in Minneapolis. He and Michelle McQuality did their presentation on March 29th. President Renfro also attended a retirement party for former NBA Troy Friedenberg that evening. He and Michelle left very early the next morning. Previously, Brian had asked Corey to get him a couple of fundraiser tickets to the March 30th opening season baseball game between the Washington Nationals and the Atlanta Braves, Brian's favorite team. Chief of Staff Keller had arranged them for him, but apparently he did not use them. President Renfro failed to attend Region 1's rap session on March 31st to April 1st, see Charge 1A. From March 30th through April 9th, President Renfro was once again AWOL. He did show up on April 10th for the USPS financial presentation, and he was in the NELC headquarters buildings for 3.5 hours on April 11th. 6 days later, President Renfro started his leave of absence. Former President Rolando expressed his disappointment with how President Renfro's behavior and absence had so significantly disrupted the collective bargaining process. Fred knew that Brian had an alcohol abuse problem as early as 2018. Periodically, he would address it with him, and Brian would allege he was talking to a counselor regularly who was helping him with his issues. There is no evidence that he actually did that. Then he would be okay for a while, but usually he would make excuses for his behavior, citing his diabetes or another medical ailment. Brian's pattern was he would drink, disappear, come back, and everyone would be happy. Then he would disappear and become a problem again. Not all of the incidents I have cited were shared with Fred. Fred's plan was to have Brian at his side constantly for an extended period so he could learn how to do the job of being president. COVID quashed that plan. Everyone started working remotely except Fred. It was difficult to monitor Brian and make sure he was ready for this challenge. Fred couldn't tell if Brian was doing what he needed to do to prepare himself for the presidency. Fred indicated that if he had known then what he knows now, he would have stayed at least through contract negotiations. In early April of 2023, Corey reached out to Marty Walsh for help with President Renfro. Marty was President Biden's Secretary of Labor before becoming the Executive Director of the Hockey Players Union. More importantly, he is a 20-year sober with the alcohol addiction and a willing source of assistance for those still struggling with their own addictions. Originally, she had given his name to Brian, but when she realized Brian had not called him, she took it upon herself to hook them up. Marty recommended the Gosnell Treatment Center for inpatient treatment on Cape Cod. This is the same place that Marty Walsh used to treat his addiction. On April 17th, President Renfro began his own treatment there. Paul said that he was on the phone with Brian and his counselor at one point during the 6-day inpatient stay at Gosnold. They discussed treatment options going forward. The counselor gave them 3 options. 1, continue his inpatient treatment. 2, enter an intensive outpatient program. And 3, go home and see how it goes. President Renfro chose option 2. He provided me with medical documentation for his 6-day inpatient stay at Gosnold as well as intensive outpatient program, IOP, after he left. The documentation covers treatment through June 28th. I've included that documentation with this report. In my interview with him, President Renfro indicated that he still attends regular AA meetings, takes medication, and receives a once-per-month shot, which is an opioid receptor blocker. He asserted that he is doing well and feels healthier than he has for a long time. I asked Marty Walsh several questions about alcohol addiction. He confirmed that it is a disease which you must treat. It won't simply go away on its own. He further affirmed that different people experience it in different ways. There are binge drinkers, morning drinkers, evening drinkers, functional drinkers, etc. You could go for a period of time without drinking, then have a drink and fall right back into disruptive behavior. All alcoholics have a physical addiction. You get treatment and handle your sobriety on a day-to-day basis. It's important to have the support of family, friends, and fellow addicts. Marty indicated that he spoke to Brian more than once and is still available if he needs to talk. He also provided some sobering information about relapse rates for recovering alcoholics. Approximately 18% of recovering alcoholics were able to abstain from drinking completely 1 year later. He further stated that recovery rates are less than 36% for people with a severe or lifetime alcohol dependence. However, 60% of those who are sober for 2 years tend to remain that way. The fact that President Renfro decided to get help for his alcohol addiction is a good step forward for his health and well-being. The fact that he waited so long to do so and then took a leave of absence in the midst of contract negotiations was not good for the health and well-being of the union. And then it's got a bargaining timeline that Tim McKay gave, which is very neat. I'm not going to read all that. It's got an NELCSPS subcommittee assignments that's in here. All this is evidence, okay? And this report is up on FromAToArbitration.com. If you go to FromAToArbitration.com, this report is on there, okay? Charge 2A, conduct impaired driving after hours in NELC-owned vehicle. And this is the last charge I'm going to read on this episode, and then we'll do the others tomorrow, okay? Charge 2A, conduct impaired driving after hours in NELC-owned vehicle. In his rebuttal to the charge, President Renfro takes the position that he was not impaired while driving an NELC car on 9-12-2018 at 10:49 p.m. He explained that after work, he went to the Alibi for supper. Brian said that he was there for approximately 1.5 to 2 hours. He had 3 or 4 drinks with dinner. Page 12 of his rebuttal to the charges. I have attached the personal admitted at doors report on 9-12-2018. See attachment. President Renfro exited the NELC headquarters building at 6:26 p.m. and reentered that building to pick up his car at 10:32 p.m., 4 hours later. He was at the Alibi for a considerably longer period of time than he indicated. 13 minutes after he left the building in his NELC car, he was pulled over by the police. President Renfro claimed he was fine to drive and did not endanger anyone nor the vehicle I was driving. Page 12 of his rebuttal to the charges. The information provided in the police report completely undermines that assertion. His own words, as recorded in that report, demonstrate that he knew he shouldn't have been driving the car. Officers Possinger, Naples, and Koch were driving southbound when they heard excessive honking that was emanating from the red Chevrolet Traverse that then EVP Renfro was driving. He was honking at two bicyclists directly in front of his vehicle. On page 12 of his rebuttal statement to the charge, President Renfro explained that they had suddenly pulled in front of him before making a left turn onto Massachusetts Avenue. The police report does not indicate that the officers felt the bicyclists were in any danger. EVP Renfro continued northbound on 2nd Street Northeast, passing the officers, after which an unknown female flagged them down and stated that she believed the driver of the red Chevrolet was intoxicated. With this information, the officers turned around and attempted to catch up to EVP Renfro's vehicle. While doing so, Officer Possinger observed the Traverse cross the double yellow lines in the 600 block of 2nd Street Northeast, correct back into the proper lane, and continue northbound. When the vehicle entered the 700 block of 2nd Street Northeast, the vehicle again crossed the double yellow lines and was driving northbound in the southbound lane of travel. At this point, Officer Possinger noted the risk posed to public safety and initiated his vehicle's emergency equipment, causing the Chevrolet to again correct into the proper lane. Officer Possinger then used the cruiser speaker to instruct EVP Renfro to pull his vehicle to the curb. See attachment includes the police report and court documents related to President Renfro's case. On page 13 of his rebuttal statement to this charge, President Renfro stated that due to the nature of the street in the 600 block of 2nd Street Northeast, he deliberately drove over the center lane as he and others do every day when no traffic is oncoming. He made a similar argument regarding the configuration of the street on the 700 block of 2nd Street Northeast, asserting that everyone drives over the center lane to ensure a safe distance from the sides of the street. It is important to remember that these events occurred very late in the evening, almost 11 p.m., when it was unlikely there was much traffic heading southbound on 2nd Street Northeast. Additionally, I took the same route on 2nd Street Northeast between Massachusetts Avenue Street Northeast two times in the middle of the day and did not observe vehicles crossing the yellow lines as President Renfro described. The officers approached the vehicle. In his statement, Officer Poshinger noted that he immediately smelled the odor of an alcohol beverage emanating from EVP Renfro. Additionally, he noted EVP Renfro's speech was slurred. At this point, the officers requested that EVP Renfro step out of the vehicle. Officer Naples noted that he was swaying while standing and had bloodshot eyes. The officer wanted to conduct a standard field sobriety test. The report states that EVP Renfro admitted that he probably would not pass the test and that he probably should not have been driven home. He indicated he needed an attorney before he would consent to the test. It is, of course, his right to do so. The officers then placed him under arrest for driving under the influence and transporting to the 1st District for criminal processing. At the station, Officer Naples provided EVP Renfro with the implied consent form and asked him to take a breathalyzer. He refused to do so without legal representation, which is his right to do so. Again, while speaking with Brian at the station, Officer Naples smelled an odor of an alcoholic beverage coming from him. The police report provides sufficient information to conclude that EVP Renfro was driving under the influence of alcohol. There is a law called implied consent. Some version of it is on the books in all 50 states, and the District of Columbia police officers are required to apprise defendants of the provision of the law. Essentially, it states that by virtue of the fact that they are driving a vehicle, you automatically consent to taking a chemical test, breath, blood, or urine. If an officer pulls you over and suspects you're driving under the influence, you can, of course, refuse to do so, but there are consequences. One is that your driver's license may be suspended for 1 year. In this case, the police report notes that Officer Naples provided EVP Renfro with the implied consent form. I spent quite a lot of time trying to understand how this law would apply in this situation. Finally, I contacted the D.C. Department of Motor Vehicles via email on August 25th. My question to them was, if you are arrested for a DUI, refuse the breathalyzer test, and settle in court for a diversion program, is your license suspended for 1 year during the 1 year duration of the program, and must you retake the written test and road test in order to have it reinstated? Responded to me on August 28th, yes, it will be suspended while you are in the program. Yes, you will have to start over if convicted of the DUI. Even if you plead guilty, you will still have to wait 1 year and then start the process over. The relevant part of this answer is that EVP Renfro's driver's license was suspended while he was in the diversion program. See attachment for an email thread. I have also provided the car mileage summary for CY 2018 for Brian Renfro's car. It shows that he was driving the car throughout the time he was in the diversion program. Of course, there are serious penalties for driving in D.C. on a suspended license. For our purposes, if he had an accident during this time frame, NELC could have faced serious liability. EVP Renfro was charged with driving under the influence of alcohol or a drug and operating a vehicle while impaired. He was assigned an initial court date of October 11, 2018. Ultimately, on his attorney's recommendation and the court's approval, EVP Renfro entered diversion through a deferred sentencing agreement. This procedure required him to plead guilty. The sentencing was then deferred, and the defendant was allowed to withdraw the guilty plea and null this case if he completed all the conditions of the agreement. Diversion agreements generally run from 6 months to 1 year. His agreement was set up for the latter. EVP Renfro successfully completed the diversion agreement. On 12-20-2019, charge number one, driving under the influence of alcohol or a drug, was dismissed. After 5 years, the arrest will be expunged from his record. That will happen this year. The requirements that the public record must be maintained for 5 years is the only reason the DUI was discovered. Fortunately, in this case, there were no injuries or damage to the vehicle. Obviously, though, when someone is driving under the influence of alcohol, the chances that injuries or damage to the vehicle may occur are greatly increased, as is the potential liability for the union. That's why NELC has a policy that all drivers of NELC cars must abide by. I've enclosed a copy of that policy, which I was provided by the Director of Human Resources, Ken Baker. It states in relevant part, driving under the influence of drugs or alcohol is prohibited. All traffic violations and accidents, whether at fault or not, must be immediately reported to NELC Human Resources, and if applicable, a police report must be provided. This policy was sent to all MBAs with a CC to Fred Rolando, Brian Renfro, and Judy Willoughby on August 2, 2018. See attachment. By his own admission, when President Renfro was EVP, he did not report his DUI to anyone at NELC. Additionally, everyone I interviewed during this investigation indicated that they had never heard of this DUI until they read the charges. EVP Brian Renfro definitely violated this policy. And then it has in there the arrest record and all of that. Okay. This weir did a very good report. And so that's the charges we're going to go over today. And we'll get to the rest of them on tomorrow's episode. All right. So there's the first part of the weir report. And as city letter carriers, that's your right to have it. Okay. Because it's your report and it deals with your union that you pay dues to. Okay. So there's the first half of it. The weir report. Tomorrow we'll come back with the second half. All right. So I'll see y'all tomorrow. Part 2, weir report. All right. Y'all take care. Bye-bye.